Nyala Kadich Wajik Nyungamort Kang Kadak Nija Wajik Buja. I'd like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to country, sky and waterways. We pay our respect to their elders past and present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples listening today. Welcome to Nyungar Wellbeing. I'm your host, Brooke Collard. I'm a Baladong Wajik Nyungar woman, and in this season of Nyungar Wellbeing, I'll be speaking to the next generation of leaders, young people of the Nyungar community, about a Nyungar perspective on self and community care.
Elijah is a Nyungar man with ancestral and continuing connections to the Wajuk, Baladong, Wilman, Menang, Goreng and Wajuri countries within the Nyungar nation. Elijah is a well-known, respected and heavily involved member of the Nyungar community through personal connections and his work. Elijah has a strong passion for cultural education and takes great pride in upholding his cultural responsibilities of learning and teaching. Elijah works at Curtin University in the position of Cultural Immersion Facilitator, delivering and designing the ICCF, Indigenous Cultural Capability Framework. In this position, Elijah teaches and guides university staff, students and external stakeholders to increase their knowledge, culture and diversity. And our second guest today is Tanisha Bennell. Tanisha Bennell is a Bibbulmun Nyungar advocate and grassroots organiser. From a young age, Tanisha has been involved in community organising and activism, from local junior councils to youth advisory committees, and most recently with their work with Orlu Justice. Identifying as LGBTQIA+, Tanisha's goal is to provide First Nations people safe spaces and events to live authentically, as well as focusing on accessibility and intersectionality in these spaces. Most recently, Tanisha's event, Nyalak Pijabilia, We Are the River, is a queer NAIDOC fundraising ball co-produced by the Rekabite, aiming to create an event that centres First Nations queer community members as well as the wider Blackfella community in Borlu.
Hi, my name's Elisha Jacob Smith. I'm a Wajuk Nyungar with connections across the southwest, and that's connections that I have inherited from my mum, which I love my mum, and I thank her for everything. She made sure that I was me and made sure that I had what I needed to be successful. So I always start thanking my mum. I am a cultural educator. That's my profession. I work professionally as a cultural educator. And my biggest passions in terms of what I do in community is sharing. And that's a big thing for me because I just love sharing, particularly around making sure that there is visible identity for our families, Aboriginal people in general, but particularly queer mob. That's what I'm really passionate about. And I really believe that if you can visually see that your identity belongs in a place, then you're going to feel that you do belong there, which is the truth. But unfortunately, living in this colony, our visibility has been mostly erased, particularly in Perth area. We've got the stories there, but if you haven't had the privilege to learn them, you need to have some visibility to show that as well. So that's what I do. That's what drives me, what gets me out of bed.
And Elijah is wicked and deadly. Kaya, I'm Tanisha Bennell. My connections are through my Bennell line, which is connections to the Collards, to the Kickets, to the pretty much anyone down this way in the southwest. I'm very lucky and fortunate to stand on the shoulders of giants, and I pay big tribute to all my old pops and all my nanas and my matriarchs, specifically Nana Justine and Nana Marie, who are my nanas who are still holding around and passing on knowledge. Yeah, and what I do professionally, I'm currently working at Reconciliation WA, so we do a lot of work around reconciliation. Right now, our focus is shifting to a different kind of way of what that looks like, post-referendum especially. So we've been doing a lot of big yarns and community gatherings to gain information and feedback from what community really needs at this time. But outside of work, I do a lot of activist work and a lot of advocacy work, specifically around queer mob as well.
I got to meet some of the Reconciliation WA team, it was last year. Mm. And it was really cool work because obviously I was seeing them all before we got the outcome of the referendum. And it was just amazing to see like what they're doing. And then also she was asking me as someone who's under 30, like my perspective on it. And at the time I just gave, just from being on social media a lot, like what I was seeing. Because at that time, it was about March last year. So, yeah, it was very, like, negative at that time.
And basically, the way that Reconciliation WA is set up, it's set up as a co-chairing not-for-profit. So we have an Indigenous co-chair and a non-Indigenous co-chair, and everything is split 50-50 because it takes both Blackfellas and Wajalas to come together to do the work. So I love that's the setup, and I know that we're hopefully moving towards, we're in the process of, like, really changing the structure with the business to follow what community's doing post-referendum and to make sure that the work that we're still doing still reflects the point of what reconciliation originally began. But yeah, in a new kind of way, which has been interesting. A lot of older mob don't really like the word reconciliation, which is also important to acknowledge because, yeah, they see it as reconciliation means that you had a relationship prior. We didn't have a relationship prior to colonization. So what are we reconciling? It's actually, yeah, building that relationship from the start.
Yeah, because I definitely know a lot of old fellas who are like, I don't like to use that word because they're like, I have nothing to reconcile with Australia. They have something to reconcile with me. So, yeah, like you're saying, it's not that some of those old fellas who have those views, it's not like the, I guess, how you're saying you've got the co-chairing thing with reconciliation, WA. A lot of old fellas don't feel that way because they're like, people need to come to me. I shouldn't have put in that work because they've done it their whole lives. Exactly. And that's why it's like our turn to step up now as well.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I agree. I think we are sharing, caring people and we always have been. The lack of is been coming back to us. We never get nothing back. And people starting to now, and I think reconciliation is really important because it's a stepping stone and you have to understand that you can't just get to where you want to go. You've got to go on a journey there. Mm-hmm. And so each little step is a very important part in the journey, but you've got to keep taking the next step. And so that's really important. You've got to evolve with it.
Yeah.
Otherwise you just stay in that one space. Mm-hmm. You'll only get the people who are actually receptive to be in that space coming along until you take the next step, and then you'll get the people that are receptive to that space, and then you've got to get them all coming.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's really important in the conversation because we have to keep going, keep moving, keep pushing, never ending. Mm-hmm. How terrible, you're born into being an activist. It's your whole life.
Whole thing. Yeah.
And it was really laughable, actually. You're just like, congratulations, you've made it into this world, so now you can be an activist your entire life until you die. And hopefully you can achieve something.
Yeah, and justify everything.
Haven't.
Yeah, because I really love how some people phrase it where they're like, you know, our existence is political. We can't avoid it no matter what. You hit the nail on the head with how you said that.
And you just have to see that so many people that we know was walking down the street and they have to be affected by racism and homophobia, transphobia every day. Some of us that drive around our own cars and got these privileges, we don't necessarily experience it as much because we've got a little safe space. But when you're just out there in the world, no bubble, you're right in the front. And that is the experience on a normal day for a normal person, I would say. So I think in terms of doing that sort of work and reconciliation and creating safe spaces is really important.
Yeah, I really agree with what you said about like our bubbles. I feel like that was really prominent within the referendum as well. Because like everyone around us, like we knew where they stood. We knew what they would be voting. We knew that like their intentions and like in our bubbles, we're safe. Clearly, that's not what the rest of Australia is saying. And that was, I think, what I found the hardest post-referendum was trying to reconcile with that fact of, wow, I live in this bubble with like Mudjik people and amazing people and incredible advocates and allies, but that's not the reality for a lot of mob, and especially not the reality for mob who live in like remote communities and regional communities. Like they have an even smaller bubble. Like living in Perth, I have a bubble and there's still people outside that bubble that are Winyan. But imagine living in like a even smaller little town and having to face those people one-on-one way more than we do like here. And I think that's even more important for mob who are both visibly queer and visibly black, because they're copying it from two fronts. They're copying the transphobia or like the like homophobia and also the anti-blackness.
Because like my experience, the only thing I can really like add to that is I grew up super religious with the like Jehovah's Witness side of the family and the Collards. So like myself realizing I was queer was like later in life than you'd realize, because it was like in an environment where it wasn't even an option and it just wasn't talked about. A lot of people call it like comp het now, which is super interesting, but it's great that people are having these conversations and they're coming out in the open now, because I have so many friends who are black and queer and they just feel too anxious to leave the house most of the time, like just because like you said, like they're visibly presenting in those spaces and people aren't kind.
And people have been so nasty, especially I feel like post-referendum, it's every horrible person in Australia is just ramped up. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah, their opinion has been justified.
Yeah, because this wasn't the way it was.
I know. No. And it's really sad. I don't like to try and imagine a false reality because unfortunately we have to live in this reality. And so I'm like, okay, we'll try and imagine things as they are as in terms of solutions.
Yeah.
But in terms of teaching students, like through university, I get the opportunity to teach lots of different people. And there was one man, I believe from Uganda, that I was teaching, and he said something really interesting to me. He said, "Are you happy?" I said, "I guess I'm happy." And he said, "Do you think that your families are all happy with their situations?" I said, "No, I'm not really happy with the situations because they deserve better." Mm-hmm. And then he said, "I agree. You said that Aboriginal people are 3% of the Australian population. So there's 97% other people there who should be supporting Aboriginal people as the First Peoples of this country. So why is the Australian government and the people of Australia not putting the 3% first? Like, it has a minimal effect on the economy to just change some systems to support people who are the minority within other minorities in the country. It's just crazy. Should be first. And he actually said that people shouldn't, they shouldn't be happy until the First People are happy because it's only
3%. Yeah.
And I think that's what really hit me with the referendum is once, obviously, I was looking really looking forward to having input on our own lives, which would have been really nice.
Would have been great.
But also that recognition as the First Peoples of the country, I thought that could actually be a way of having those discussions and having that a reality once it's actually enshrined in the Constitution as being the First People, because that's really important.
Yeah. You
know, currently, we're not actually recognised as First People. It's just higgledy-piggledy words that people say, but that's no meaning.
A lot of box-ticking and a lot of, that's what a big conversation that we've been having at work as well has been like a lot. I feel like a lot of Australians haven't thought about the international view post-referendum and the international impact that it had. And like people who were like holidaying in like America, like someone came to one of the yarns and they were holidaying in America when the referendum happened and after the no passed. And she said, I was having American shopkeepers ask me where I was from. And then when I told them I was from Australia, they like apologized because the referendum came out as a no. And I'm like, that's to a Wadjila person. And from an American, typically we think of, we think of Americans as quite racist and quite backwards in their own Trump, just coming out of the Trump era over there. But it's like Americans are apologizing to Australians because they failed and because they didn't want to enshrine our voice and they didn't see the value in enshrining our voice. And there's so much value that could have been had that passed. And now we're just in this sort of like post limbo of where to go next. And I feel like, yeah, a lot of our old people are disheartened, but they're still fighting and it's, they shouldn't have to be. Like they've been doing this like, some of them are like 80, 90, like still pushing, still showing up for rallies. And you're on. When will it stop? And when do we finally get our input and our voices heard? And not just in one minister that is meant to represent over 200 groups of people, all with their own laws and customs.
That's Wara. It's just like the evolution of the 1905 Act, Native Affairs and then Aboriginal Affairs. Yeah. How random.
Yeah, literally. It's literally like the same thing.
Yeah, not much has changed.
No.
But I think that's really important. And I think in terms of what you were saying about elders always going and going, I don't believe there's much I could actually say about this, but I am a part of a group through Walcombe Cartagin, which is Rainbow Knowledge, if you're not speaking in Yungar. And that's really exciting. I'm on a governance group with elders in terms of talking about all this stuff and how we can be more inclusive to young queer people and older queer people, all queer people from different backgrounds to actually provide the support that people need to live their life safely in cultural embrace, which is really crucial. So I'm really looking forward to the future, actually, because that's where I'm putting a lot of my effort into, actually, community-driven stuff that we know is going to have effect on our community. We don't need the government to tell us that we can or can't do it. I'll do it anyway.
Yeah.
One thing is that post-referendum, that actually really kicked me up the quan there. That's the bum. Just anyone that don't speak
disclaimers.
I'll just do some translations for you. Yeah, kick me up the quan. Was to go, okay, why are we waiting for other people to tell us that we can make our space? No, we're just going to do it now. My friend Log cornered me in a kitchen at the Willoughby Community Centre, which is super random, said, let's do a camp. Yeah. Love them. And I said, oh, what kind of camp? Oh, like a queer camp? I said, oh, let's do it. Within a couple of months, we went down on the camp. And only a little group, we came there. We just got some funding from Wear It Purple, which was nice because obviously while we want to do our own thing, we need some money.
You need some resources.
And we're also very poor people. Mm. So we want some money. And one of the big things is we don't want people spending all their hard-earned money, especially with young people, to have to go out and have these cultural opportunities. I think in terms of the 97%, we hope that they will support us to actually get to where we need to go. And we went away on country and it was just the best experience. And for all the people that came, you could see the benefit that it had. And that really made me very emotional because I thought, gee, I've had such a privilege growing up with my mum and with family around that are supportive and teaching me cultural knowledge. And as a queer person, I had a very hard coming to terms of my identity situation as a young person, because you've grown up and, like Brooke was saying, growing up in the church, my dad was a minister and my grandfather was the first Aboriginal reverend in Australia with the Uniting Church. And so it was like that was the reality. And, you know, I actually constantly heard from not just family but school and people around that gay was bad. And they used to say, oh, you're a half caste. And I thought, what is that? And I didn't even know what that was, because we didn't learn about that. We just learned that we were Aboriginal and, you know, we learned about that. And then as I got to an age where I understood, oh, my God, you know, do I not belong? Because the only information that's out there is racist, basically. And the only information that's out there is homophobic. And so I thought, oh, I don't belong anywhere. And this was at a time where the internet was just these strange videos that you used to watch and download things from LimeWire. There was like basically nothing.
I used to watch YouTube vlogs just to see if there's someone else out there with the same experience.
It was really hard to find the sort of information. And I had multiple scenarios where I tried to end my life because I didn't believe that I belonged. And then as myself, I took many years coming to terms with myself so I can actually be here and be fully present and support others and teach and stuff. But now after going on the camps and looking back and going, oh, my God, this is so important, because it's not just me. There's hundreds, if not thousands, of people who have similar situations as me, and we all need to help support each other and ourselves in a safe space. So I think that really leads into the discussion that we're building into in terms of creating a safe place in general, I'm going to say, just in general, because many places are just not safe. And that's why we're here.
But to do that, we also do need funding. And so it's like, how do we navigate the white space while still trying to keep the old ways and like the black culture going, and also just support our mob and uplift our mob and make sure that they know that they're not isolated and that they're not, their experiences aren't individual, and that they do have shared experiences and that there are other people that they can lean on and go to. And that's why I think what you're doing with LOL is like, I'll get emotional, so I don't even want to talk about it. But serious, like, just, because I think about, I'm on my period, Nguyen. But like, I think about growing up, I came out at 17, which is pretty young. It is. I'm only 23 now, so I've not been out that long. And I came out in a 2-year relationship with a straight man. So that was crazy and a lot to navigate. But I always knew the same ways that I was queer, but I would have crushes on girls and I'd try to talk about it with my girlfriends and they'd be like, oh, yeah, but you just think she's pretty. And I'm like, yeah, I do think she's pretty, but like not
it's a bit more than that.
Yeah, but not in the same way that you do, I don't think. And trying to unpack that with a bunch of straight white girls, they're like, it's no, you're not getting it, sis.
You see them short-circuiting in front of you.
Legit. And then it's, oh, no, I don't want them to think I'm weird or different, or it's already hard enough to try to assimilate going to a private school, a pretty predominantly white private school. It's already so hard to try to assimilate into that space. And so I'm already walking in as a black fella, already have prejudices, and like growing up in Kwinana, they find out I'm from Kwinana, they have other prejudices about that. And now I'm like, oh my God, I don't want them to think that I'm gay, because that's just another thing for them to like judge and ostracize me about. And so like now I see so many like loud and proud queer young people, and Ingrid's kid, Dillian. Oh my God, like so special and just the best person ever. And I just see them being so loud and proud and like doing the work and being so passionate and driven at such a young age, like the age that I was just figuring my stuff out, and they've already figured it out. And because it's because they've got people like you and people like Ingrid and people like these leaders in community who are out and loud and doing these things and creating these spaces. And that's why it's so important. But I think as well, what I've been reflecting on is what you touched on, in we need to make spaces that are just for us, because there's none. And that's what was really hard going into the queer scene in Perth with Bulu Justice, was like, yeah, we can host an event at the Rekabai, or we could host an event at Connections, but Wadjalas are still going to come. So inherently there's going to be a level of cultural unsafety that we have to try and navigate, and that we're going to have to try to work around. And that is so hard. And so a thing that I've really been focusing on, I guess, this year, and what's my, like what I really want to work more towards, is like creating spaces that are just for queer mob, like just for queer mob, or just for mob, but that elevate queer mob specifically, because I know that we have deadly allies that are black and are like on the same train as us and want to decolonize all the ideas about queerness. But I feel like a big thing is to be inclusive, sometimes you have to be exclusive. And a lot of Wodgilas don't like that.
Yeah, I really understand what you're saying. What I thought about in terms of starting up the camp for mob is that, okay, this is a space only for queer mob.
Mm-hmm.
And some people, they say, oh, I'm mob and can I come? I said, are you queer?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Oh, sorry.
You're
not allowed. Sorry, but you can go into a gender binary space with women or men or whatever. But a lot of the people that want to come on these experiences, they don't fit in the society that we even have in terms of Aboriginal people currently. We'll change it.
Yes.
And we've got to be more inclusive.
Yeah.
And in terms of some people said, oh, I'm queer, but I'm not mob. So can I come? I said, no.
Yeah.
But you can give some money.
Yes.
And then you can enjoy that you supported.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then it's really about having our space and the availability to live your authentic self.
Yeah.
And whatever that looks like, I think that's a different scenario for everybody. But as queer mob living in the colony, for starters, we have to come out as queer.
Yeah.
And the expectation is that you're straight. So that's a whole big thing.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly if you're fair-skinned mob,
mm-hmm.
you have to come out as being black as well. Mm-hmm. What the hell? That's just warra. Mm-hmm. And so it's no, we need our space to focus on living your authentic self, because before you come out, really, people say, why is this such a big deal coming out? Before you come out, you're actually not your authentic self. No. You're just a version of yourself acting constantly to make yourself palatable to the people around you, and you feel ashamed.
Mm-hmm.
So you actually have to come out into a safe space, which we haven't had previously, which is real scary.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we've done the camp. So you can come on there and actually experience who you are with people that aren't going to be judging you, people that are going to be celebrating you, which was really nice. And that's what made me emotional, because it was just really special. We want to have that, more of that. But like you were saying, the logistics of having an organisation, oh, my God.
Yeah.
But it's so important.
Mm, yeah.
And so we have to have that. And then I think once we get ourselves to our full authentic selves, then we can collaborate with other people.
Yeah, yeah.
And in terms of that sort of stuff, I think collaboration is a very important thing, because logistically it's very hard to run an event, but we have people who have gone to university, they've got the qualifications to do that. They're already running events. Collaborate with us in a realistic way, not just in consultation, in full collaboration, and understand why we're doing this.
You know,
and actually be authentic in itself with that. I think when I reflect on the Nyungar totemic system, in terms of everybody having their responsibility, which doesn't determine their gender or anything like that. It just connects with who you are, where you come from, and your identity, and then up through levels of knowledge. And that's really important to recognise, is that the only people that will have the same totems of you are your teachers.
Yeah.
And those are the people who may be similar to you.
Yeah.
And it's important to recognise and respect other people's journeys, other people's knowledge systems, and other people's totemic connections, because they're not the same as yours.
No, yeah.
And someone else is not the same as yours, and you're not the same as theirs.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a perfect society in terms of traditional cultural way of living, where you had a mutual respect for other people who were not the same as you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And today we're living in a society where unless you're the same as somebody else, they're not going to respect you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really important.
Yeah, yeah.
And sorry, I don't mean to cut you off there. Because just in film terms as well, it's a big thing, because I did a queer Noongar web series last year. But even with that, like, that was a whole initiative called Out Now, and that was only for queer people to apply to. And I spoke with some people later who were like, oh, that was actually quite a tough thing, because obviously there was a lot of marketing afterwards of who got it. So you have to actually be like comfortably out to apply for it. And it's so hard to get this funding in the first place. An event like Bulu Justice that you're doing, and camp as well, sometimes like the people who have to come along, what kind of considerations are you putting in so people who aren't comfortably out can be involved as well?
Yeah And that's why we do it, basically, is to say, okay, this is an opportunity for you to explore yourself and become comfortable out, which is a really long process. I'm 32 and I feel like I'm still getting there. Like, people look at me and think I'm like solid rock. My aunt in Imelda, she always talks about me and saying, oh, he's just unapologetically gay. And I'm like, I'm actually not.
Yeah, yeah.
That's just your perception of me.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a lot of work to be comfortable around other people.
And you still feel those levels of shame, hey? And just those, yeah, I feel like a lot of people perceive me as, even in my blackness as well, I get that a lot. You're really staunch and you are really vocal and you're always doing this and doing that. And I'm like, I am, but it's scary. And a lot of the time I've taken myself out of opportunities where I could be highlighted as like the LGBTQ plus NAIDOC awards or anything like that on the national scale. There was, I can't remember, it was like the 30 out under 30 or something, and someone wanted to nominate me for that, and I actually said, this was like 2 years ago or something, in like 2021 or something, and I was like, actually I don't want you to nominate me because I am not out properly, and that would be everywhere, and that is terrifying to think about. And that's
scary. I think as a cultural educator, you know, my entire life, I'm going to say, is teaching people.
Yes.
Because as we spoke about earlier, that's unfortunately the reality. Mm-hmm. I recognise that majority of the people that we encounter don't actually have the capability to be talking to us because they went to the same education system that we did. And frankly, it's, are we allowed to swear on here?
Oh, yeah.
It's shit.
Yeah.
And it's gonna.
Yeah.
That's the translation. I'll back the other way, just FYI. And it's really worrisome. They actually don't know how to talk to us. They got no idea. And then they get caught up thinking, oh, how am I going to be not racist? How am I not going to be this? Yeah. Then you end up racist and you end up homophobic and you end up downright stupid.
Yeah.
And I will use those words because that's what it comes across as. And until you've actually gone through an educational process, which has to be self-driven, you have to drive that yourself so that you can then have the capability to then communicate with us in an understanding way, because you shouldn't be nearly at the event and then they're saying, why is that important?
No, exactly.
No, they need to know why that's important prior to even engaging in the first place. Mm-hmm. And then that's the difference between consultation and collaboration, because consultation is at the end and you're just like, oh, I'm just checking. Do you think this is okay?
Mm.
It's not.
Yeah.
Collaboration is a legitimate collaboration from the beginning. And to even be able to collaborate, you have to have done the work to understand prior to collaborating.
Yeah.
That's really important. That's the key to a safe event, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And we are so far off because we're trying to collaborate with people, like I said, who haven't put in the work. And they're expecting you to hold all of the colonial trauma involved in what that is. What do you call it? Colonial safety.
The colonial load.
Yeah.
Colonial load. That's the one. Mm. Yes, that's the one.
Mm-hmm. We're meant to be having conversations about what reconciliation looks like moving forward. So both perspectives. And we have everyone from like young black mob who are like super radical, super burn down the colony, to old white people who are like crying because their ancestors like were like some of the first colonizers of the Swan River colony.
Just going off what you were saying as well before, Niche, like just that power of social media too, because I know for myself, like I grew up always knowing I was Noongar, but again, like that religion was super strict on, I wasn't allowed to connect cultural things because it was viewed as pagan. I had to do a lot of work as an adult to reconnect to family and just learn cultural stuff. And where I started was the Facebook events. Like I would see things like then Viv was doing like a bush medicine workshop and I'd just like rock up and just say, hey, like I'm family. I don't know where yet, but this is my great grandparents. And as soon as I'd say that, people would be like, oh, yep, yeah, I'm your nan. I know exactly who you are. And then slowly, because I've been making those connections, I would know more and more.
Mm-hmm.
But do you feel like, especially as a queer Noongar person, that social media helps in your well-being, or do you think it's more negative than anything?
I think it has negatives and I think it has positives. So like computers, social media, that was already happening. That was like a thing, but it hadn't really like exploded, and like Instagram and like TikTok and all these new things, like all of that stuff is new to me now. It was really important in my coming out experience because it helped validate a lot of what I was feeling, and it helped verbalize it, because that was like a lack of language, basically a lack of knowing what words fit. And before I came out, like my whole understanding of queerness was just lesbian or gay. Trans wasn't even a thing. Non-binary wasn't even a thing. Gender non-conforming, like all of these things weren't even a thing. So even just to learn about bisexuality or pansexuality, that was like, whoa, I don't just have to be one or the other, or I don't just have to be straight. There's other options. There's other, I can do basically whatever I want to do, whatever is driving me. And that's the thing. That's why I label myself as queer as well, is because I don't identify as like one of those labels. I feel like I just connect to people based on their souls, which I think is is a very cultural thing. Like I connect with people's spirits more than anything. And so being able to see people like Native Americans who have this whole identity of a two-spirit person, and the fact that they were involved in their communities, which I know is also a thing within Noongar communities, we've just lost that. But to see them reclaiming that and like their understanding of love being down to the spirit of the person and down to the soul of the person, I was like, wow, that's a legit thing and I can be that way and that's normal. I couldn't even imagine that without social media. But then obviously, yeah, it can be very draining. I think for a lot of young mob, we need to practice kind of self-discipline with social media and like being really intentional about like how and when we're using it, because the comment sections are not the place to be.
No.
And I'm glad that a lot of recently I've noticed like a lot of news pages and stuff are turning off comments, and I'm like, good, because yeah, it's traumatic to constantly have to read those nasty, horrible things. I think social media is an incredible tool that can be utilized in a really positive way to share knowledge and to share unfiltered knowledge as well, especially. And I think we've seen that with the whole Palestinian issue that's coming up at the moment, is we've never seen that level of violence and colonization in our lifetimes. Like we've seen it and we've seen the impacts of it and the repercussions, but we've not seen an active thing like this. And I think that is really important historically, but I also think it's damaging on young people. Mm. But I think there's negative and positives like with everything. But I think, yeah, I definitely wouldn't have been able to come out if I didn't have that access to representation and visibility and language.
Books. Yeah. Yeah. I agree with what you're saying as well. I think in terms of when I did my introduction, I was talking about the visible identity and visibility. And I think it has that ability to show you other people who are similar to you. Mm-hmm. And that's really important in terms of validating you and your experience and your identity. But you do have to be selective, because there's so much trauma that is just thrown in your face. And we're not trained psychologists. We don't really have the ability to filter a lot of the information that's coming to us. As a collective, yes. But in terms of as a single person, you're actually copying all of that trauma and bringing it into you. That's really scary and really bad for your well-being. So I find it a really hard place to be. And I've been going off there a little bit. And I guess that's what reinforces to say, okay, maybe now we'll be a little bit more present and actually say, instead of just relying on social media to have inclusive spaces, we forcibly do it in our own community. So that just walking down the street, you can see that you belong. You don't have to go and search far and wide for someone. But I just want to just quickly say, my dear friend Braden Hill, who's just so amazing in terms of Walcan Cartagin stuff, he sent me the other day some statistics from the surveys that were actually done. There was 619 participants all between the age of 14 and 25 from around Australia, all queer young people between those ages. And 35% of them are non-binary.
Wow. Oh, wow, that's huge.
Yes, that is big.
Yeah.
Because in terms of ourselves as queer people, we're like, oh, okay, we maybe grew up in an era that was just like gay and lesbian. And now there's more visibility of in terms of information. And in terms of the support that is being developed within community now is becoming a lot more specific, because they are future and they are beautiful. Just reflect back on that. I did some training at Curtin University when I started there, because they do ally training. And I'm gay. You don't just automatically be an ally. You actually have to go an educational process, to understand. Anyway, when we're doing the training, they were talking about non-binary, and there was a breakdown in that. And I thought, oh, my God. I fit into one of those categories in terms of being gender fluid. Because I just always thought that I was just the gay man and cisgendered, which I am. But I don't know if you've noticed anything about me, but I always am fluctuating between different types of external sort of expressing. I thought, oh, my God. I am gender fluid. And when I researched up that, I thought I would have never known about that until I'd actually had that information presented to me. And I thought, oh, my gosh, That's why I'm not the same as all the other gay men.
Yes.
Because they all look exactly the same every single day. When I don't. Every day I look a little bit different and then I just totally change. Yeah. And that's really interesting and important. So it's in terms of going through a process to learn about other people, to actually learn about yourself, because then we can cater our support to make sure that it is authentic to people that actually need it.
Yeah. And I so see myself in the gender fluid space as well, because like, I found only recently too, I was like, I feel like I align more with like she, they, and like speaking to someone like Luke Bollier as well, where it's like speaking to them about it. They're like, yeah, because I don't identify as a woman in the Western space, but I identify as a black woman, which is a different thing. So that's why I feel aligned to that as well, because I don't feel like I represent this ideal of femininity that we've grown up with. It's like a different thing. Yeah.
I actually had a big thing with that end of last year, because I started using they, she pronouns like middle of last year, and I didn't want to come out as like non-binary or like gender fluid or gender non-conforming or anything like that, because I was like, I'm still feminine and I love being feminine, and I love all of, every black woman is like such, I want to be a matriarch. We were the matriarchs. We were the head of the households. Like, we called the shots, and we're a matrilineal country. I love to hear that you're also like along that journey, and I just want to validate you so hard in that, because it is so true and it is so valid. And I feel like not enough people are talking about how gender is a social construct and how other social issues impact that as well, and how we need to be aware of those things when we're coming into those kinds of spaces.
Oh yeah, you're totally right. I think definitely the experience of a first person, I'm going to say, is completely different. And I believe that the more information there is about our reality and our information out there, a lot more people would change. And I would imagine that that demographic, or what you would say, 35% would actually be a lot higher in terms of people that we associate with who maybe wouldn't actually understand that. And even then, it's putting it in a box. But you have to actually see other people to realize that you're not alone, and then there actually is, there's truth there.
Yeah, no, I love talking about gender, because even just going back to language, like Baal instead of like he, Baal. She, Baal, they, them. So I guess, because for yourselves, like you're saying, you're coming from two different communities, like in one person, like multiple communities, and that's a massive colonial load for lots of different reasons. People are coming to you because you are in this niche. What are things that you're doing for yourselves that actually help yourself and your well-being when those things arise?
It's a hard one. And as actually an educator, I have to turn up and actually turn up as a full self, knowing full well people are going to be questioning my authority when I'm there and whatever. So there's a lot to it. In terms of in my workplace, we've negotiated that when I am just sick of the colonial load and I need a day out just being my authentic Aboriginal queer self, I can have a day. And they're not going to humbug me. I'll say, look, I need a day. I'll self-plan and put that there. And I'll just go down the beach. That's a really healing place for me. Mamba Court is what the beach is called in Yungar. And in Yungar, Mamba is a father. And a court is your heart. And it's like the father's heart there. And he loves his little children. So you just go down there and lay on the mother, Buddha, and just listen to that heartbeat. And that is so healing. So I just love that. And otherwise I'll go into the bush up the hills or somewhere like that, sit underneath the beautiful trees, and particularly if there's water trickling there, that's just nice for me. But of course you have to come back into the reality of the colony afterwards, which is just yawn. But I just do that, and I'm able to self-manage in that way. Sometimes I hide a lot of myself in terms of particularly what I put on social media, because I don't want to put myself fully out there, because then I don't have anywhere to retreat. And then that's actually how I look after myself in those situations as well.
Yeah, I think I do the same. But I guess one of, like, a lot of the things that I do is similar, is go to Buja. I really like to spend a lot of time by the Bilya, by the rivers. Basically anytime I'm stressed, I'm going and sitting down by a riverbank and just sitting there and just, like, I really like to write. I write a lot of poetry, so that's really cathartic, and I just get really, I'll just be typing away and just like fully just, and then I'll go back and edit it and be like, okay, calm down, sis. Right. It's just, but sometimes it's just getting it out. I'm also a very avid voice messenger, so I just vent to friends. I legit, and I have the most wicked group of queer friends. Basically, almost all my friends are queer, and and POC or Black or disabled or have some intersection. So we all have found each other and have a really cool found family.
That sounds lovely. Yeah, definitely sharing with other people, particularly people who are in your inner circle that you really hold dear. I find that really fulfilling as well. And just like dealing with it. And then going to my lovely friends and family and then being able to have that just authentic sharing. Mm-hmm. It fills your cup, doesn't it? It fills your right. It's really special.
Yeah, because you do need those like families that you make for yourselves, because like sometimes they're not like just readily available to you. You don't just necessarily grow up with those, not resources, but those people that you can talk to about those experiences. Because again, just talking from like film perspective, because the Blackfella film community is so small, and then the queer Blackfella film community within that is even smaller. So as soon as we're always in these spaces where it's so white male predominated like industries, that we all just clock together all the time, because it's just like we're going to vent about something that just happened and yarn about like
side eye in the room.
So yeah, like you need to create those like communities around you that you can talk to.
So I think it's really important. And I think the ideas of chosen family as well. I think for a lot of queer mob that can be a bit taboo, because the idea of family and lineage is really important in culture, and it is for sure. I'm the eldest of 7 kids, so I don't always have the access to go and rent to mum when mum's got like, you know, 6 boys at home to try and deal with and baby Cara now. So there's not always that access, and there's also they're not queer, so they don't have that same shared experience or that same shared lens that my chosen family would have. And neither is a priority, but both are equally important and equally add value to my life and help me in different ways and different scenarios. And I think that I just wanted to put that out there for mob that might feel a bit whinyan about having a chosen family or a different kind of group. You can have both, and both are equal and relevant and valid.
I would just call them family. Because they make you feel a certain way, and I think that's really important. Growing up, I was taught about, from my stepdad, George Wally, at the time, Mandragorodup, which is the Noongar name for Mandra. I grew up in Mandra. And Mandragorodup, people say, what's that? How do you say that? But particularly, it's 3 sections down phonetically. Manja is a meeting place. Gort is your heart. And Arp is place of. And you would think, oh, is that meeting heart place? You'd say meeting place of the heart. But then you've got to think about, okay, why is it heart? And what does your heart do? And your heart pumps blood around your body. That's its
job.
That's its thing to do. That's what it does.
Yep.
It doesn't make you feel love. Feel something, and then your heart starts pumping faster. And I would say that anybody that gets your heart going like that are family, because that's friends and people in your life, but because they're the people that make you feel that way. Your heart starts pumping so fast and pumping your blood around that all the little hairs stand up on your skin, and you get this feeling of, it's emotional. And that's what the story of Mandra is, where people actually coming together and seeing their loved ones. They're not necessarily family. They're all those people that you need in your life because they're very important to you. Mort. And we love them. We need them. I believe you can't get through life without a support system and a family.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Noongar Wellbeing with me, Brooke Collard, and my guests Elijah Jacobs and Tanisha Bennell. You can find more episodes at sbs.com.au/Noongar Wellbeing, or follow the series in podcast apps like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and the SBS Radio app. 4 to 1.